Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Here's the deal, Clay. ESPN thought they had a monster on their hands when the schedule first was released. They've got Saints and Colts right near the end of the season. You expect both teams are probably either going to be in the lead in their division or right there in the thick of it. You've got two wonderful quarterbacks on Hall of Fame trajectories. One's a no-doubter. One's on his way to the Hall of Fame. And then it turns out that they have no luck. I know that's a bad joke. I put it on Twitter last night. Not everybody appreciated it. I thought it was gold, but no Andrew Luck, and then all of a sudden you've got a Colts team that's pretty much out of the mix without a ton of help that's probably not going to come, and then the game turns out to be an unbelievable performance by Drew Brees, and that's really just about it.
Yeah, I'm looking at Drew Brees' stats right now. The guy went 29 of 30, four touchdowns, set the all-time touchdown record. They stopped it. I was disappointed that they didn't give him a certificate like they did. I guess that was a couple of years ago now where they stopped the game. Remember they gave him, like, they had the NFL guy who gave him, like, a little piece of paper there at the Superdome field. What was that for? Most, maybe, completions?
Yards? Yeah. I believe it was one of those two, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Probably most yards. I don't remember exactly, but guy goes 29 of 30 last night, four touchdowns, and he doesn't have a perfect quarterback rating. And I'm like, well, what more could you do as a quarterback? Go for over 300 yards, 29 of 30 from the field with four touchdowns. You blow out a team in the Indianapolis Colts, which has gone from 5-2 to 6-8. And my math, you know, from doing the show with me a lot over the years, I believe that is 1-6.
Yeah, that's right.
In the last seven, is that correct?
Yeah, that's like Ryan Succop kicking field goals since his injury. One for six.
1-6 ain't very good. And so we'll get to Brees here, certainly, and talk a lot about what the Colts might have to do going forward as well. But to me, as good as Drew Brees is, and I know there are a lot of Colts fans listening along to us this morning as they start off their day, I think there's an intriguing decision to be made by the Colts. And when you look at Jacoby Brissett, and again, I know that you can say, you know, he hasn't been healthy. And I know certainly you can point to T.Y. Hilton, who is effectively a shadow of the player that he was prior to his injury. And Marlon Mack missed a lot of games. And there have been a lot of injuries at the, you know, at the individual player positions. But Jacoby Brissett just flat out hasn't gotten it done. And I don't know if it's because teams have now gotten used to him and they're aware of how to game plan for him. I don't know if it's the injuries on offense. But I think you have to contemplate what makes sense kind of going forward at the quarterback position. And certainly part of this is that we're going to be asking for several years, oh, is this the year that maybe Andrew Luck decides to come back? And maybe the Colts have a better sense for that than others do. Maybe they believe that that retirement is for good and it's not going to be a boxer retirement. You know, it's going to be a normal athlete retirement. Yeah. And he's not going to come back. But if he's not going to come back and you feel good as Jim Irsay based on conversations that you've had with his representatives and his family and whatnot, I don't see how the Colts aren't in the quarterback market in terms of potentially drafting somebody in the first round if there's somebody there, if your doctor sign off on Tua and he's there, or if you really like Justin Herbert and he is there. I feel like the Colts are going to be right about that level in the draft, where certainly Joe Burrow is going to be gone and the number one pick's going to already be taken. But I think that you have to at least consider the idea of having somebody that you're grooming behind Jacoby Brissett, because he's gotten a fair shake at it. He's had an opportunity to demonstrate that this is his job and that he's the quarterback of the future. And certainly the Colts invested substantial money in him. I know they were talking about this during the broadcast last night, but it's not as if they couldn't get away fairly cheaply after next season. To me, a big part of the story of this game and the way the Colts have gone 1-6 down the stretch is that Jacoby Brissett is just not really the answer. And effectively, the Colts eliminated themselves from playoff contention last night. I'm not sure if there's still an outside chance that if the Titans lost both of their games and the Steelers lost both their games, you may know all the latest tie breaks and the Colts won out and they all ended up 8-8. Maybe there's still a possibility somehow that the Colts could get in the playoffs. I frankly don't know. I don't think there is because I know they split with the Titans and they lost to the Steelers. So I would think the odds of them winning a three-way tiebreak are virtually zero. But that's a big decision that has to be made there. And then on the other side, I think as we start to work through the playoff picture in general for the Saints, look, I mean, it is going to be a war down the stretch in the NFC in particular at the top, where there isn't that team that you look at and think, by God, they are just flat out amazing. If the season were ending right now at the top of the NFC, you would have the Seahawks the one seed, the Green Bay Packers the two seed, the Saints the four seed, the three seed, the Cowboys the four, the 49ers as the five, and the
Minnesota,
Vikings as
yeah.
the six, right? So I'm looking at these standings right now. And obviously in the NFC West, it can easily jump from being the overall number one seed to falling all the way back to the five, depending on what happens in the next couple of weeks. And as we saw on Sunday night with that, or Sunday afternoon with that Julio Jones catch. So when the Saints play like they played last night, they are as good of a team as there is in the NFL. If you're a Saints fan, I think you had to be really impressed, most of all, with your defense that just flat out shut down the Colts, who had been playing decently, at least on the offensive side of the ball, even though they hadn't been winning. They had at least been at times making plays, and to have everything just kind of come undone for the Colts, and to have the 49ers in that position where they're sitting at the five, looking at the Saints right after you lost and got run by the 49ers. If you're a Saints fan, they came into your place and scored 48. It's a big bounce back performance on a signature stage on Monday Night Football. I think you have to feel a lot better about the Saints. And again, if you're a Colts fan, I think you'll leave that game asking, what is the future of this franchise? Are we really going to be committed to Jacoby Brissett or not?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that particular question, because my wife, who tertiarily pays attention to the NFL, that was her question. We're sitting there watching the game, and she just says, so are the Colts going to draft a quarterback after this season? Just
yeah.
kind of out of the blue. And I said, you know what? Maybe. And interestingly, they also had $102 million in salary cap money. They had more money than anybody else in the league that they could have used, and they didn't really use it during the offseason. Now, maybe the assets that they needed weren't out there, but I think at this point, try this on for size. I don't think the Saints would let this happen. I don't, because I think they see the end of their guy coming pretty soon. But maybe the Colts quarterback's actually sitting on the Saints bench right now. Like, I don't know if Justin Herbert is somebody I would want over Teddy Bridgewater, for example, if I could get Bridgewater. I'm not looking at the Jameis Winstons and the Cam Newtons at this point, or the Marcus Mariotas if I'm the Indianapolis Colts, but Bridgewater looked awfully good when Drew Brees was out. So, like I said, I don't know that you could lure him away. They may try to find a way to make that happen, but I do think that you're right about Brissett. And I think it's unfortunate because the circumstances haven't been good for him, with T.Y. going out for as long as he was and Marlon Mack breaking his wrist. But those guys combined for 45 yards last night. Hilton and Mack did. Brissett is not a guy that's going to win unless everything is perfect around him. And that's not generally going to be the case in the NFL. That's why you can't lean on him as your long-term starter.
Yeah, look, I think the positive, if you're a Colts fan, is you gave him $21 million effectively next year, and that's because you're so far under the cap and because suddenly the Andrew Luck expenses are eliminated. But this guy becomes an unrestricted free agent in 2021. Now, with the franchise tag, now I know we have a new CBA coming and everything else there. You don't feel like you I think probably if I were the Colts, what I would consider doing is maintaining him as the starter, letting him come back next year as the starter, see how the season starts off. But I would be interested in drafting a guy to potentially be the replacement. And I feel like you're in a little bit of a luxury, as you mentioned, because of all the salary cap space that you have, that if you got a young quarterback, you could build around him so well if you really liked Herbert or you really liked Tua, particularly Tua, I would say, because you could allow him to heal, not necessarily even have to play him for a year. And again, because you're in that rookie cap space, you're not having it cost too much money. That's one that I think the Colts are going to have to explore. And the other option would be what you said. Maybe you go out in this free agent marketplace, and there's other guys you like that you think you could get for more affordable prices. But to me, potentially going into the draft, given the fact that you're going to be drafting around, what do you think, 16-ish?
If I'm the Colts right now, Clay, I don't want to win another game, and I tell them so. Now you're in full-on tank mode. You want the best pick you possibly can have so that you have a shot at one of those quarterbacks.
Yeah. But I think right now, even so, I mean, you're talking about drafting around 16.
Probably.
If your doctors come back to you and say, hey, Tua looks like he's going to be fully healthy, but it may not be fully healthy and able to play this year, I don't know necessarily that that's a bad look for me as the Colts franchise, because then if you start off the year again with Jacoby Brissett and you let him be your guy, I don't think there's anybody out there that can say, oh, Jacoby Brissett didn't get a fair shake, right? If you get a full year to start in the NFL and then you get to come back another year and you know it's your team and you get to start again in next September, which I think is probably likely for Jacoby Brissett, I think it's hard to argue you didn't give the guy a full shake. And he just may not be able to take that step and be an Andrew Luck level assist for you in the years ahead. And that's certainly what you hoped. But I don't think – I think the Colts have ended up being more what we anticipated they were going to be when we got that bombshell in August where all of a sudden Andrew Luck says he's not going to be there. The Colts are now sitting at 6-8. If they finish 7-9 or 6-10, then I think that's kind of what we would have anticipated, even though they started off 5-2 and sold us the idea that maybe he was going to be a little bit better than he has been.
See, I think Brissett is decent. He's adequate. He's pretty good in the right circumstances. I look at it this way. It's sort of a weird analogy, but television these days, because of all the streaming options and everything that's out there, if you want me to pay attention to your show's got to be better than just good. If I'm going to go to somebody and say, yeah, that show's good, I'm probably not going to stick with that show. Because at this point, there are great shows, and there are so many of them out there that being good is not good enough. So Jacoby Brissett is that show that's, I mean, it's all right. It's pretty good, but I don't have time to watch that show because there's way too many quarterbacks that are far better than him in the league. That's where you realize, okay, this guy's not the guy for the Colts. And then on the flip side, just a hypothetical, not really hypothetical, but a thought experiment here about Drew Brees. When we talk about Brady and we talk about Manning and we talk Elway and Marino and Montana and all these guys, Brees is almost never in that discussion. Do you think that that's fair, or do you think that we kind of undervalue Drew Brees and how good he's been?
I think he's probably undervalued. I think a part of that is, and I don't have the data in front of me, I feel like Brees isn't always in the playoffs. And a lot of those guys that you just ran through, certainly the Bradys and the Mannings of the universe, every single year they have been in the playoffs. And I don't have the Saints last 10 years or 12 years or whatever it is with Drew Brees in front of me right now. But certainly they have made runs. But there have also been a lot of, it seems to me, again, off the top of my head, maybe you can pull up like the last 10 years of Saints data. It seems to me there's a lot of years where the Saints are 7-9, 8-8, 9-7-ish. And Drew Brees posts big numbers. But we really define quarterback success so often in the postseason. And I know he's got the one Super Bowl, but he's never won an MVP. By the way, one move that I like, and I know we're talking about what happened last night, but the Saints have had issues at corner, and they've had issues against teams that can be explosive in the passing game. Certainly, we saw them give up 48 to the San Francisco 49ers. They added Janoris Jenkins, who was released by the Giants. I'm going to talk about him later in the show and why I think the Giants may have overreacted to the way that he spoke, but I like the idea of what he could mean to this secondary going forward. It's a pickup that to me makes a lot of sense and is low risk, high reward potentially.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Totally agree with you.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We're joined now by Charles Davis, as we are every single Tuesday in Hour 1. Appreciate him joining us. He called the Chicago-Green Bay game. Maybe he could have been out there to deliver a lateral at the end of that game. And he's got Rams 49ers coming up this weekend. But let's start with the game that you called. And this is a question I think a lot of people have, Charles. How good are the Packers? Do we really have any clue?
I don't know that we do, Clay. They believe that they've got the formula. But when they get as, let me make sure I have the right word. They get a little testy when you talk to them about their record and how they've gotten there. My colleague Pam Oliver interviewed Aaron Rodgers at the end of the Chicago game and said, hey, you know, and I can't remember exactly how she phrased it, but she's like, you know, just kind of like, how good are you guys? That sort of a thing. And Aaron was like, I know that a lot of people out there aren't real convinced about us. And, you know, and he kind of said, we haven't really finished off things. He said, but we're 11-3, and I'll ride that all the way into the playoffs. So that's kind of where they are. I watched them Sunday, and they got it to 21-3 against Chicago, Clay, and it looked like they were ready to close the door. And they let Chicago hang all the way around, and that crazy lateral play at the end, if Jesper Horsted laterals to his right, I believe to Allen Robinson, he walks in.
Yeah.
And if he walks in, they go for two. We could be playing over. We could still be there. And it was 8 degrees at kickoff with wind chill, and I'm glad we're not. So, but that's really what it came down to, and it never should have come down to that, frankly, Clay. It never should have gotten that close.
Because I feel like we've seen virtually every team that's at the top of the NFC at a high-end performance, right? Like, I know how the game ended with the 49ers against the Falcons, but we have seen the 49ers really play at an incredibly high level, right? They took down the Packers, beat them pretty solidly. They went on the road. They beat the Saints. I mean, they have been really good. I feel like the Seahawks with Russell Wilson, I know they're 9-1 in one score games, but we've seen them be really, really good. And the Saints, we've seen at times be really good. But I don't feel like we really know what to expect of the Packers, and that's why this game against the Vikings coming up this weekend, I kind of expect the Vikings to win.
Yeah, it's going to be like that. I think if I were to go back and say the high-level games I would give Green Bay, Oakland at a time when Oakland was, you know, people were going, oh, they're ahead of schedule. They're going to press Kansas City a little. But the win at Kansas City is the one I point back to for Green Bay.
And the problem with that now, one, though, is Matt Moore was playing instead of
Moore instead of Patrick Mahomes. But still, the way that they went and played, and you know the environment in Kansas City.
Oh, it's raucous.
I thought that was big. And Aaron Jones played really well for Green Bay that night, catching the ball. I think he's like 159 yards receiving that night. So those are the ones that I would look at as their most high-end performances. But I think all in all, the way they have won this year, to me, their formula is winning in the red zone because they score at a very high rate in terms of touchdowns. And on defense, they're limiting you to more field goals. Like, you know, the touchdown rate is what they count in the NFL. Going into Sunday, it was 50% on defense, which is really good. It was tied for sixth in the league. And I think they were like second or third in the league in offense in terms of like 68%. They scored touchdowns. That's been their formula and how they've won. But they do feel like they've left a little bit out there each and every week.
So you have called, even though you're going to be at Rams 49ers, which is a big game in its own right, but you have called a lot, I believe, of Eagles and Cowboy games. You're familiar with those two teams. The storyline leading into this week is going to be who's going to win the NFC East. Who do you make as the favorite? What do you expect to see in that game this weekend?
Well, if the problem is if we could bottle the best performance, like we were just talking about best performances,
I would
take Dallas even on the road in Philadelphia, but when have we gotten any consistency out of either one of them? And we really haven't. You know, we've kind of gotten here, still can't figure out quite how. And for Philadelphia, those receivers that they're playing with, they had no idea that these guys would be playing for them at this time of year when the season began. You know, Greg Ward off the practice squad, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is a second-round pick, but they thought they'd be able to almost redshirt him this year. And right on down the line, you're not exactly throwing to the top quality receiver they thought, which puts more emphasis on Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert. And for Dallas, if they're going to bring that game with them we saw on Sunday against the Rams, well, they should be the favorite in this game, even on the road. But can we really say that we're going to see that from them? We can't, because that was the first team that they beat all year long that was above 500. Let's just see how this thing plays out. I'm going to carefully say Dallas,
but it's careful because I just don't know how this thing's going to go.
Did it surprise you the way that the Texans-Titans game went down in Nashville on Sunday?
It did, because I thought that the way the Titans were playing, they had hit their identity, hit their formula, and I thought Derrick Henry would be able to control things. The interesting part, and always with Houston, is what do you do with Deshaun Watson? You know, when he's at top level and he's doing things and you can't corral him, that's going to be a problem. But I was surprised that Tennessee had to come from off the pace to make it the game that they did, and that made things a little bit difficult for them. That was my surprise. At home, second year in a row, Clay, really, because remember last week, week 17 was the Colts, and they couldn't solve them to get into the playoffs. This doesn't mean they don't get in, but their road gets a lot tougher now, and you can't ask for a better opportunity than to be at home and control things. And here comes Houston, and look, has Houston been exactly consistent this year? Beat New England, get whacked by Denver. It's a weird division, isn't it? And I just thought Tennessee had a chance to take charge on this one.
Is it crazy of me to think that the division may have been decided on that tip ball? And I know there was no score in the second quarter, and the Titans have a first and goal at the 5. And I'm sure Arthur Smith went back, and he's looking at that film, the offensive coordinator for the Titans, and he's like, I got an absolute horse in my backfield in Derrick Henry. Maybe I should have just run him there and seen what happened. But instead, the play looked like it was working pretty well. Tight end gets the ball hit. And it's not just that the ball gets dislodged. The ball gets dislodged into into someone's lap. And then it's a 90-yard interception return. It was a 14-point swing there. And I really think that might be the deciding factor in the division this year.
Right now, isn't Tennessee wishing the ball were shaped like a basketball and not a football? And all you got to say that is, how many times have we seen, what is it called, an oblate spheroid? Sounds really funny for people. And it's Anthony Firkser, who's a pretty dependable guy. You know, you just don't expect this to happen, and as you said, for it to bounce and go in the direction. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I think so. And I think it's kind of like if we were to ask Jimmy Johnson to this day, first and goal, where were they, on the 5-yard line, Penn State, Miami, in that Titanic game in the Fiesta Bowl?
Yep.
And he doesn't hand it to Alonzo Highsmith. They throw it with Vinny Testaverde, and he throws his fifth pick of the night, Pete Giftopoulos. I think to this day, like every time I see Alonzo Highsmith, he just looks at me and goes, I'm not going to score from the 5. Really?
Same thing, by the way. Don't want to trigger any Seahawks fans out there, but I think Pete Carroll still thinks it. With he's got an incredible Marshawn Lynch in the backfield, and they decide to throw it, and Malcolm Butler, who ended up making a big salary contract, I think, right, with the Titans.
He's out for
the season, but he's an unknown guy at that point, and he steps in and picks off the pass, and Tom Brady's got another Super Bowl.
And we were all there, and we all knew that they had trouble running it at different times. But sometimes you just got to throw that stuff out the window. And they had the momentum. He was just coming off a big run that got it to the 1.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost one of those ones, Clay, that you say, why do you even go huddle? Right? You just line back up and stick it in his chest again and keep a momentum play going. And sure, hindsight's 20-20. But the shock that day, it wasn't just at the stadium, was it? Like, if we could have taken a snapshot around the country and world, when that ball went in the air and got picked, and everyone's immediate second thought, because the first one was watching the play, right? The second thought was, why didn't they run Marshawn Lynch? Like, everyone thought the exact same thing. You'll never be able to convince anyone it was the right call. I understand that.
Buffalo Bills haven't had a 10-win season in 20 years, Charles, which is crazy. A lot of people out there, by the way, also thinking, I can't believe it's been 20 years since 1999. So there are a lot of people out there starting off their morning like, thanks, Clay. But how much enjoyment? I'm sure you saw some of the reaction of the Buffalo Bills faithful and how excited they were to welcome that team back as they got to 10-4. What do you think about the Bills being back officially in the playoffs with a couple of weeks to go?
Oh, I love it. I think it's one of the great stories in the NFL. You have to have these, Clay, to keep things moving around a little bit. This is the type of thing that somewhere Pete Rozelle, the former commissioner, has a smile on his face, because this is what he envisioned, because he was big on the P word, which was parity.
Yeah.
And we have the league kind of set up for parity each and every year. Some teams have broken the curve, like, you know, New England, obviously. Green Bay most years, right? You can go right down the line of teams that perennially make it. But for the most part, we're trading out 4 to 5 teams every year that changes playoff teams. And now that the Bills are back in for the second time in 3 years and playing at such a high level, I think everyone's excited about that. Because look at their back-to-back weeks. Thanksgiving Day at Dallas. Now, you can say what you want about Dallas. When you go on the road on Thanksgiving Day and beat Dallas, that's worth as much as beating a real true contender, isn't it, Clay? Because the whole country locks in on Dallas. Then to go the very next week on the road on a Sunday night and beat Pittsburgh, I don't care if they're third or fourth quarterback, to beat Pittsburgh on the road on a Sunday night game, I think they've proven their bona fides. And the Bills Mafia, as they like to call it, have you seen social media, Clay, how many people have locked in on this? Not just fans, but the ex-players. You know, Cornelius Biscuit Bennett, I saw him. The Bills back in the playoffs. Once you're a Bill up there and become part of that, you stay that forever. It's a big deal. It's almost like a college tradition there.
We're talking to Charles Davis at CFD22. Joins us every single Tuesday during the NFL season. Okay, I asked you who I thought you'd pick in the Cowboy and the Eagle game, which is the big drama in the NFC playoff race. Who would you pick? It looks like it's going to come down. I know there's still some crazy scenarios out there, but it looks like it's going to come down between the Steelers and the Titans. Who would you like down the stretch to be more likely to be able to get to 10-6 or 9-7? Who do you think is the final playoff team?
I lean towards Tennessee because I just think, as you pointed out, that was one crazy play away with Houston. I still feel like their formula, they've locked in on it, running it, Tannehill throwing it very well right now, and I think they've got a defense that travels. Now, does Pittsburgh have a defense? Obviously they do. But Devlin Hodges is their quarterback. I like Tannehill over Devlin Hodges. That's why I kind of give them a little bit of the edge.
And the last couple of questions here for you. We're talking to Charles Davis again at CFD22. You are on the road calling the Rams 49ers game. That's a big game for the 49ers who went from the 1 seed to the 5 seed. Now, if you're a 49er fan, the positive is if you win out, you will still be the overall number 1 seed in the NFC thanks to some of those big wins we mentioned earlier when we were talking. What do you expect to see in Rams 49ers, particularly because the Rams looked really bad against the Cowboys? 49ers, this is a must-win game. What happens?
Yeah, the Rams, you know, they have a scintilla of opportunity to still get in, right?
Yeah.
So they'll play into that a little bit. The biggest thing they're playing is pride, because it's not just the fact that the Cowboys rolled them and pretty much eliminated them. Earlier this year, San Francisco went to L.A. and stomped them. I mean, Jared Goff didn't throw for 100 yards in that game.
Right.
Todd Gurley didn't play in that game, and the crowd was filled with red and gold. So you add that to it. The thing that the Rams have going for them, carry your pride with you, carry a good team with you when they're on top of their game, because, look, they came in, we all thought they were going to beat Dallas in Dallas. So that's a good thing. The tough part for them is how healthy will the 49ers be come Saturday? Because Richard Sherman expects to play this time. He didn't play this week. They had, what, 5, 6 starters didn't play against Atlanta? They feel like they'll get a good number of them back, and they have so much to play for down the stretch, as you point out. They win these two, beat Seattle and Seattle to finish it off. They win the division. They get the number 2 seed, I believe, or the number 1, and off they go.
Charles Davis, outstanding as always. We'll talk to you again soon, my man. Enjoy the game this weekend between the Rams and the 49ers.
I look forward to it. You take care of yourself, Clay. We'll talk to you soon.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
I love the game that Urban Meyer is playing right now. I'm not going to lie. All right, we have got uncertainty in Dallas as the game against the Philadelphia Eagles inches closer and closer. Whoever wins the Cowboys game against the Eagles is going to win the NFC East, barring some sort of cataclysmic result in the final week of the regular season. This is everything for the NFC East. It's a default playoff game. Jerry Jones is unhappy with his head coach, Jason Garrett. It seems quite clear that Jason Garrett is not going to be back. Into that void has swept the rumor mill surrounding Urban Meyer. Now, this is an interesting angle because Urban Meyer's had some success on television as part of the new Big Noon kickoff show, and I'm sure he's making a couple million dollars a year, and it's an easy gig. But I was wrong on this.
I thought Urban Meyer's move in deciding to slide in to that show in L.A. on the Fox Studios lot, where I am working, by the way, all week out here for Lock It In, marketing, and everything else, a television show. I thought when Urban Meyer made the decision that he was going to be on this Fox Studio lot doing his show at the intersection of Pico and Motor in West L.A., I thought it was a clear attempt to let it be known that as he was sitting there alongside of USC Heisman Trophy winners Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart, and SC was struggling during the season, every time they would go to halftime during an SC game, there would be Urban Meyer waving, and USC Trojan fans would be thinking, there he is, our salvation, let's bring him to USC and let him do for SC what he did for Florida, what he did for Ohio State, win a national championship, and bring us back to the glory days. That's really what I thought Urban Meyer had in mind. And maybe he did. What's interesting here is there are reports that Urban Meyer's background, maybe particularly at SC, because of all the scandals that are going on at SC right now, the admission scandal, the improper behavior of medical deans and everything else. There's a bevy of scandals right now that are still playing themselves out at SC, that maybe they thought we don't need necessarily a scandal-ridden head coach to take over, and maybe SC didn't pursue him as aggressively as Urban Meyer wanted. Maybe they didn't offer him full power and control like a coach such as Urban Meyer would want. I can certainly understand how that could happen. And also that leak comes out and it says, you know what, maybe there's some concern about Urban Meyer's background in college. Given the way that he left Ohio State, maybe colleges aren't as interested in him as we thought. That had to hit Urban Meyer's ego in a big way, if that is true, okay? And let's not underrate the egos that college football coaches in general have, because they are effectively dictators on their college campus. There are very few jobs that exist in America today where you can be in total control of everything and everyone surrounding you, like college football head coach. Now, certainly there are critics. There is an uneasy, as Shakespeare said, uneasy lies the head that wears the crown. There's no doubt that when you are the head of a college football program, there are a lot of people constantly gunning for you, both rivals and external forces, because you're responsible for all your players, because there's all these different sorts of shady shenanigans going on in college athletics everywhere when it comes to recruiting, when it comes to player behavior, when it comes to so many different levels of that universe that we find ourselves in. So maybe Urban Meyer is not the ideal choice to replace, but in college right now, the guy has an ego unlike any we've ever seen. Way up there. Nick Saban's the same way. I'm sure Dabo Swinney, who constantly now is carping about how his team doesn't get enough respect. All of these guys are like high-end politicians. It's interesting. When you become so successful that there's a cottage industry of people following you around, just it's trying to solve every single issue that exists in your life, you sort of lose touch on reality. And that's the way a lot of politicians become as they become more successful. They got this whole coterie of aides, you know, they're constantly following them around. If you're in Iowa right now and you need a bottle of water, there's like 50 different interns who will do backflips to make sure that they can get the bottle of water to you as fast as possible. That's what being a college football coach is like right now. So Urban Meyer does television for a year. He doesn't get as much interest as maybe he would have preferred in the college ranks. Maybe they aren't willing to give him total control, not giving him total power. So what does Urban Meyer do this past weekend? He sits in Dan Snyder's owner's box and watches Dwayne Haskins play in that game against the Eagles. This is such a power move by Urban Meyer. I just have to step back and applaud him. The Washington Redskins don't have a head coach. Dan Snyder is among the most reviled in the entirety of the NFL owners. Dan Snyder has tried over and over and over again to go buy superstars, whether it's head coaches or players, to bring in around him to help to diffuse the criticism that he faces. Remember, he brought in Steve Spurrier instead to Steve Spurrier, take over the Redskins, you got this, my man, with the idea that Spurrier was going to be able to bring his offense to the NFL and that it was going to work flawlessly. Of course, it didn't, because Steve Spurrier didn't really translate that well to the NFL, and it was a failure from the get-go. But the initial hosannas, the initial praise that rained down upon Dan Snyder for being able to pry Steve Spurrier away from the Florida Gators and bring him into the NFL was probably among the greatest praise Dan Snyder has gotten in his career. Similar to the praise, by the way, that he got for getting RG3 before RG3 fell apart and Deion Sanders late in his career. The Redskins, whether it's Albert Haynesworth, whether it is now Adrian Peterson, consistently overpay for older players, Alex Smith. And as a result, the results of their franchise tend to be relatively minimally awful, right? And look, I say this as a guy, not minimally awful, maximally awful. I say this as a guy who went to college in Washington, D.C. I know how much the Washington, D.C. area and region loves the Redskins. But look at what's happened in D.C. The Capitals have won a Stanley Cup. The Washington Nationals, the Wobegon Nationals, have won a World Series. In MLS, D.C. United has been really, really good over the years. And the team that has consistently failed is the most beloved. We're not even going to talk about the Wizards. The Wizards are a joke. But the team that has consistently failed is the apple of the D.C. sporting public's eye, the Washington Redskins. So Urban Meyer gets in Dan Snyder's ownership box. As the rumors are percolating that Urban Meyer might be the Dallas Cowboy head coach, what's the best way to maximize your leverage? Get two billionaires who desperately need you to give a stamp of approval onto their franchise to end the criticism that they are under. Jerry Jones and Dan Snyder see Urban Meyer as their lifeboat. They see him as their life jacket. They see him as the opportunity for them to escape the Titanic and suddenly step right on to another better vessel. And that vessel is the Urban Meyer, the SS Urban Meyer. They want Urban Meyer to cleanse all that they have wrought that has been problematic for those franchises over the years. Jason Garrett, not a big-name coach, never has been a big-name coach. Boom, you replace him with Urban Meyer. If the Dallas Cowboys do it, it's Jerry Jones going back in time and going and getting his own Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson, one of four guys to win a Super Bowl and a national title. Jimmy Johnson, Barry Switzer, Pete Carroll, three guys, sorry, and the fourth guy, Urban Meyer, it has to appeal to his ego. But Jerry Jones, in theory, could go back in time, go grab another college coach. Oh, what do you know? Guess who won Super Bowls for Jerry Jones? Two different national championship-winning college coaches. Urban Meyer could be the next guy. Well, Dan Snyder sees that, and he thinks to himself, wait a minute. We already invested in Dwayne Haskins. He was Urban Meyer's quarterback last year. If Jerry Jones is going to be hiring this guy, what in the world am I going to do with my head coach? I need somebody good to help to replace the stink that has surrounded the Washington Redskins franchise for so long. Is there anything better than being able to bring in Urban Meyer, trotting him out in front of all the media, and letting Urban be the salvation for the Redskin franchise? Letting him help to erase the stench that has followed so many of Dan Snyder's decisions. And for Urban Meyer, how brilliant is this? You get two billionaires bidding against each other. There's no better place to be other than being a billionaire yourself than when two billionaires decide they want to employ you. Because money isn't an object. You know, it's always kind of interesting when they put high-priced art for sale. You ever watch an auction when they roll out some of this, like Salvatore Mundi, I think. You can Google it. Most expensive piece of artwork that has ever sold. And it sold, I want to pull up the dollar figure. I want to make sure I get this right. The Salvatore Mundi sold to the Middle East to, I think, the head of Saudi Arabia, this Mohammed bin Salman, I believe is his name. And the Salvatore Monday was a painting that is being that has been attributed to Leonardo da Vinci, came out around 1500. It went for auction, and it sold for $450 million in November of 2017. All right, I want to repeat that to you. It sold for $450 billion. And the report is that the Saudi Arabian Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, was the one who bought it. Now, they don't really know exactly where this painting is now. Why do you spend $450 million on a painting? Because you can. Why do you go get a coach that everybody else wants? Because you can. Franchises, in some sense of the word, sports franchises in our country, are like portraits that billionaires hang on their walls. Not because they're the best way they could possibly spend their money, but because they aren't. They want you to know that they have the money to buy Salvatore Mundi for $450 million and hang on the wall this Leonardo da Vinci painting. Urban Meyer is the NFL's version of that painting right now. And he has got Dan Snyder and Jerry Jones both sitting there with paddles, holding them up in the air like it's an auction. Urban Meyer is that painting that can help to signify for both the Redskins and the Cowboys that their owners are in touch and in tune with the fan bases and that they have a plan to solve the problem that is directly in front of their franchise. And Urban Meyer knows this, which is why he was in that box watching Dwayne Haskins on Sunday. Also, I think Dan Snyder hates to admit when he's made mistakes. If you look at his history as an owner, he hates to admit when he's made mistakes, and he doesn't want to acknowledge that they made a mistake in drafting Dwayne Haskins. He wants to find a coach that can make Dwayne Haskins look like a great pick. Who better than Urban Meyer? And let's go back to Urban Meyer's ego. He wants these billionaires both bidding for his services, but also his ego has to have taken a hit. Ohio State was better without him this year. The most impressive job in Ohio State's recent history as a performance on both the offensive and the defensive sides of the ball came without Urban Meyer and Greg Schiano. That team with Ryan Day as the head coach was better than the teams with Urban Meyer, with the exception of 2014, when I think Urban Meyer did one of his best coaching jobs ever. Look, I mean, you can criticize Urban Meyer for a lot, and certainly I have on this show. The guy's a phenomenal coach. The guy is a phenomenal coach. He won a national championship with Chris freaking Leak at Florida, and Tim Tebow spelling him as a freshman, and he also won a championship with his third-string quarterback in Cardale Jones. That is a phenomenal job of coaching that Urban Meyer did on his first Florida Gator championship and his only championship at Ohio State. And if you're Urban Meyer and your health has been an issue, couldn't it make sense to be in the NFL instead of college because you don't have to maniacally recruit all the time? Because you aren't responsible and at the beck and call and behest of every 16 and 17 and 18-year-old kid who you got to be texting emoticons with all day long. That can't be something that most coaches enjoy remotely. And for Urban Meyer, this would make it all about football, and he could follow the Pete Carroll model. Pete Carroll left SC in scandal and went to the Seattle Seahawks, and now he has re-established himself as one of the greatest football coaches of all time because he's one of three guys who has ever won a Super Bowl and a national championship. Pete Carroll most recently, Barry Switzer, and Jimmy Johnson. The same thing could happen with Urban Meyer. I think it has a lot of appeal. Think about Urban Meyer as that portrait up on the wall for both the Redskins and for the Dallas Cowboys. Who's going to get him? This is going to be a fun story. I hope the Cowboys get him because it would just be so much entertainment. But I think this is a story that we are going to be following throughout the offseason. And you have to say that Dan Snyder has the advantage because he can pull the trigger and hire a new coach faster. Because Jerry Jones got to wait and see what's going to happen in this game against the Eagles. He's got to wait and see what's going to happen for the rest of the year before he can go and hire a new head coach. Pay attention to it.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Petros Papadakis joining us now at The Old P on Twitter, AM570 LA Sports. Petros Papadakis, what did you think of the performance of the state of California on Sunday? Kind of a big offer, right, for LA and for the Bay Area. Not a good weekend of NFL action.
Well, you can't really, like, there's a lot of 49er fans here in Los Angeles, but I'm from LA. I don't care what happens with the 49ers. Like, there's nobody in town that I know that really cares what happens with the 49ers. So I'm not going to wear that 49er L.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
That's fair. But everybody what did you think about the Raiders? Kind of, you grew up in L.A., and a lot of L.A. people are still Raider fans. What did you think about the way they finished it off by managing to lose up there in the Coliseum to an awful Jacksonville Jaguar team at the last possible second? That was a kind of felt like a good metaphor for the Raiders in general, didn't it?
Well, even when it's your job, right, to play football, when it slipped away and you're really playing for your own tape, it's kind of, well, likely that this sort of thing will happen. You're susceptible to this kind of thing, which is blowing a game. Obviously, it's kind of a weird emotional situation up in Oakland, but those people have had their hearts cut out a couple times. You know, the Raiders left Oakland earlier and then came down here to Los Angeles, where they were quite popular, and now back up to Oakland. And that really, and I'm not a guy that likes to make fun of stadiums, because they're all very unique in their own way, and they all have a story, and they all have their own set of circumstances. But the Oakland Stadium is a sewer, literally. Like, the toilets explode every single year. And the A's still play there. And it's just a terrible place, and the owner doesn't have enough money, much like the Charger situation, right? The owner doesn't have enough money to build his own stadium, which is kind of the key to getting a new stadium built, we finally figured out, in the state of California in 2019 or the 21st century. So, you know, I get it. I think those fans will still love the Raiders. The L.A. fans still love the Raiders. And they'll be wildly successful as an attraction in Las Vegas. I think you, especially with your gambling TV show, believe that.
Yep.
And I think it's okay. You know, I think it's okay to leave Oakland. It's sad for a very small sect of people that go to those games. But beyond that, I think their fandom will thrive, as it will continue to nationally out in Las Vegas. Now, who are they on the field? You know, I'll be interested to see what year three looks like under John Gruden. I don't think they like Derek Carr very much, and they might have to move on from that. The Chargers played horribly, right? Turned it over seven times,
yes,
against Minnesota. And then the Rams haven't been consistent all year. I don't know why anybody's surprised with any of it.
Do you think the new stadium opening up, we've talked about this some, but you mentioned how bad the Chargers are and the fact that the Vikings came into L.A. and they took over that stadium. If you were advising the Chargers with Phillip Rivers and the way he's playing, it's so hard to cut through the noise, right? We talk a lot about this on the show, and L.A., I think, is a unique market because there are so many different things going on that you have to cut through the noise with excellence, right? Like LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Kawhi, and Paul George are excellent at basketball. The Dodgers have been excellent at baseball. Even Mike Trout is excellent down in Orange County, and it's hard for him to cut through the noise. What would you tell the Chargers they need to do, as clearly, I think, the number two franchise in L.A. now, with, frankly, the Raiders in Vegas, which almost at times feels like a suburb? Granted, it's a ways away, but like a little bit of like a satellite of the Southern California area. So I think that will cut into them a little bit as well. What do the Chargers need to do to matter?
Well, number one, I think the Raiders are the number one franchise in L.A. It's not the Rams.
Okay. And so, would you agree that that becomes even more of the case with them being in Vegas? Because Vegas feels like a satellite. Do you agree with me that that's in some way like a satellite of Southern California more so than the Bay Area is?
Yes, but in the case of the Raiders, I mean, the Raiders are going to have their fans here in Los Angeles, and they're never going anywhere, and they outnumber the Ram fans, and they outnumber.
Okay, so the Chargers are in the third spot at best, and that's probably not even fair because there are huge fan bases all over L.A. for transplants, right?
No, it's probably the Niners, as you mentioned, even though I'm not wearing anybody's L. That, you know, I grew up watching Joe Montana and Joe Montana and Jerry Rice carve up my Rams teams with Jim Everett and Henry Ellard. And that's back, you know, when I was a kid in the 80s, I was a Rams fan because John Robinson, who's now on Ed Ogeron's sideline, former USC coach, was the Rams head coach, and he was wildly successful. They just couldn't beat the 49ers. But these days, like as far as the Chargers go, I mean, you have to try, at least try. I mean, first of all, I don't think they're going anywhere. I think you understand how much they're worth in Los Angeles, and it doesn't really matter who cares or likes it or not. But they have to give that building a chance, wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I think SoFi Stadium is going to be incredible. I mean, based on
just the fact that, hey, we play in this building, come watch an NFL game in this building, come watch Minnesota kick our ass in this building. You know, that was even kind of the case down at Qualcomm in San Diego for years. You know, a lot of transplants, of course they'd want to go take that trip and enjoy the game down in San Diego. So, you know, they have to depend on that and try to hope that that is a good thing for them, just as far as a draw, that the building itself would be a draw. But if you're asking me about on the field, you know, philosophically, it just doesn't fit. You know, you have this head coach who's a tough running back, ex-running back type of guy, running back coach, Anthony Lynn, who wants to play defense and be physical. And then you have Phillip Rivers, who throws interceptions every game, pretty much. It just doesn't really fit, you know. You can't absorb those kind of turnovers when you're a conservative-style offense. So just philosophically, it doesn't seem to fit. And Phillip Rivers, at one point, you know, can't be your starting quarterback anymore. And they probably should have seen that coming a year ago. That's where, you know, people in the NFL, and maybe even if they did, what can they do about it, you know, with how successful he's been? But that's kind of like the secret of pro scouting at any level, is figure out a guy's going to get too old a year before he gets too old.
Yeah, Kobe, maybe the Lakers could have had a help with that as well. All right, so we're talking to Petros Papadakis at The Old P on Twitter. So if you still were advising them, so does that mean that you go into the draft? Because you could theoretically, where the Chargers are drafting, Justin Herbert might be there from Oregon. You might have an opportunity to get Tua, depending on how exactly he recovers from his injury. So there's possibilities there as well. Or do you think, like, hey, you know, speaking of, does a guy still have something left? Cam Newton is a big name. He calls himself an icon. He probably would love to play in Los Angeles. Could that make sense?
Nah, no. I mean, I don't think so. I think they have to go with the draft and try to excite people, because if you draft, let's say you trade or sign Cam Newton or Tom Brady, you know, which people have
theoretically
talked about.
Could be out there as well. Yes.
Yeah, and Tom Brady, I think, is toast as far as being able to pick up the weights again and do the deadlifts for a whole nother season next year. You know, people get old. It's just inevitable. And taking those hits every year, I just can't imagine how he's been doing it this long. I think they have to go through the draft, because if you bring in and trade people, they're going to expect you to win right away, and you leave yourself even more susceptible to criticism. You know, it's better to go like the Kyler Murray route, which is, hey, check this guy out, you know. let's see what he's like in 3 years. Bear with us. You know, going through the draft to get a quarterback always buys you time. And it could buy Rivers a little bit more time if they're not ready to say goodbye to him next year. You know, I'm not super sure how it all moves around contractually like the NFL superhighway that it is. But I think Rivers is done. And they're going to deal with it at the end of the season or something. So I would make a change if I were the Chargers, because at some point you got to rip the Band-Aid off, and seven turnovers is seven turnovers. I mean, this guy is a machine, a vending machine for turning the ball over, which absolutely just destroys you at that level, really every level. But at the NFL level, it's super hard to overcome. And he's been a great quarterback for a long time. I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer, but he's certainly in the conversation. He's a great competitive guy. He's a wonderful person to be around by all accounts. But it might be, if you've been watching The Watchmen, it's a little bit of a TikTok.
I have not been watching The Watchmen, but I heard it's good.
It's good, dude. The comic book is good. You have to be kind of familiar with how it works a little bit.
I just finished Succession, which is incredible.
Yeah, that's a good show, too. I like the redhead.
Oh, yeah, the humor
on it. And the crackhead.
Yeah, the humor on it is just so good. All right, so we're talking about...
Oh, and the dumbass husband and his assistant.
Oh, Tom. Tom is amazing, and Greg is incredible. So we were talking about... we've talked about Urban Meyer a lot over the years, but I talked about Urban Meyer in hour two, and people tweet me, and they're like, Urban says he's not going to coach anymore. And, you know, that's the number one way to get more money is to be like, I don't really know if I want to do this. So Urban's in the box for the Washington Redskins game, Dan Snyder's personal owner box. Do you think Urban Meyer is done coaching? Do you think he has any interest in the NFL?
No, I don't know him personally. You know, I've only spoken with him on a few occasions, and he's always been cool to me. But I think Urban Meyer really likes and is impressed with what Urban Meyer has accomplished.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people talk
about
it all the time.
He has an ego, in other words.
Well, yeah. I mean, and I think, do you think Nick Saban has an ego?
No, that's what I said. You know, I said college coaches, I think in particular, because of the way the world revolves around them, have egos like politicians, right? Because there's all these people like racing around trying to make their world as perfect as it can possibly be.
Oh, more so. I mean, if you're the governor of Ohio and you're sitting in a restaurant with Urban Meyer, who are people walking
yeah.
up to?
Yeah.
You know, more so. They're little monarchs in these areas. You know, imagine being Mike Gundy in Stillwater.
Yes.
You know, it's like being Elvis in Graceland.
Yes.
So they are, you know, they're these little kings. And, you know, being able to manage it and not come off like a full-on douche is not easy. A lot of these guys really have it mastered. But the point is, all of these guys have had so much success. Obviously, they embrace the challenge of things. You know, I don't know his health situation, so I don't know him personally, and I don't know what his family would move him or not move him to do. But you offer a guy $10, $12 million a year to do a job he's been doing since he was a young man at freaking Bowling Green, he's going to listen, you know? So I never buy it when a guy says he's never going to coach again. I think Gronk's done playing after being knocked silly. You know, I'm willing to believe that. But I didn't believe Urban Meyer was done coaching when he left Florida. I don't believe he's done coaching when he left Ohio State. You know, Bob Stoops went down the freak. Do you think Bob Stoops is done coaching?
Well, he's in the XFL now, but that would have been a funny question, too. He's not even there's no telling. They haven't announced how much he's getting paid, but I think you're right.
Well, he went down the road with SC.
Yeah.
You know, allegedly. So, you know, I don't think any of these guys are done coaching for $10 million a year. I don't think anybody's done coaching.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You could probably get Schnellenberger back. God rest his soul.
For $10 million a year, there's no doubt at all. Appreciate the time, my man. I hope you have a excellent Tuesday, and we'll talk to you. No, we won't talk to you next week because it's Christmas Eve. You got all your Christmas shopping done yet?
Off?
I'm taking Christmas. Are you working on Christmas Eve?
Oh, Schnellenberger's still alive.
Oh, good. But by the way, are you working on Christmas Eve?
No.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah,
no,
I'm taking Christmas Eve off.
That's when my family celebrates.
But actually, you know what I got to do? I got to do television on Christmas Eve. We don't get Christmas Eve off for television, but I'm taking Christmas Eve off for radio.
Well, that's the burden of stardom.
Stardom indeed. Low-level, F-list stardom. Appreciate the time, my man. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Yes, sir, Clay. Merry Christmas to you and your family and all your listeners all around the world.
Merry Christmas to you as well. It's Petros Papadakis at The Old P.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.